Hello and welcome to Digital Careers Meets, part of Barton Rock's Digital Careers podcast, which aims to offer insights and advice to advance your digital career, as well as make your digital hiring more effective. My guest today is Steve Thompson, Chief Customer Officer for Asia Pacific for DHL's supply chain business. And today we're going to be talking about the digital influences within the logistics sector. I hope you enjoy listening. So welcome to Digital Careers, Steve, and thank you for being involved. And just by way of introduction, Steve Thompson, my guest today, is the Chief Customer Officer for Asia Pac for DHL. Delighted to have you on the show. Thanks for being involved, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Guy. Appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
First of all, let's try and break down DHL a bit, because big organization, 380,000 employees, I read, which is staggering, the size and complexity of that business, I'm sure. But you're focused very much in a specific part of DHL. So do you just want to qualify that segment and perhaps give the audience a bit of an understanding how DHL is structured?
So, I mean, DPDHL is actually 550,000 people. That covers four divisions in the main. There's a post division, which is Germany, which is 150,000 people. And then the brand of DHL is divided into three main divisions, which is Express, which is global network of planes linking up 220 countries. DGF, which is a freight organization, which is air freight and sea freight, similar network, similar breadth. We do have an e-commerce division as well, which again is a global network of final mile deliveries. And then there's a supply chain division, which I'm a part of, which is domestic warehousing and transport. So very much a multinational FMCG and global company customer base, where we're looking after domestic storage and then domestic transport, and also a sort of an LLP product, which does transcend sort of borders and global supply chains, which we link up.
Yeah, okay, understood. So today we're going to be talking about the digitization of influences within the logistics space. But before we move into that, do you want to just talk about your job? So Chief Customer Officer for Business Development for Asia Pac, bit of a mouthful that, but what does actually entail? What are you measured by, Steve, essentially?
Yeah, so there's probably three main things which drive the role. First of all is new business for DHL supply chain, which is new customers. New volume coming into the business. There's equally that whole customer relationship, which is really the customer officer part, which says, how do we look at feedback? And we've got an NPS that we do with our customers every quarter. So we've got that system in place globally, which is a whole digital system in itself of analyzing customer feedback. And about 60% of our comments we get back really are around, you know, what they're feeling quarter by quarter and how service is going. And then the third part of the role is renewals. I mean, we as a business are a service orientated business. Our product is customer service, and therefore renewals are key for us. They're sort of a collection of 3 and 5 year contracts that make up our business. So the part that I'm part of is a 5-region business. We're 14 billion euros globally, and obviously all the challenges that come with that, both in a local business and then a regional business across APAC.
And what about some of the segments that you work across? Because it's quite diverse, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So we've got retail, we've got consumer, automotive, engineering and manufacturing, energy and chemicals, and then technology. So 6 main verticals that we're across, which effectively covers most of that customer base.
So that sets the scene about DHL and your job. So talking about the digital influences, before we inevitably, I suppose, move on to 2020 and COVID and the impact, very tempting to pour straight into that. But let's sort of rewind. You've been with DHL for the last 12 years or so. If you look back at the last 3, 4, 5 years, where have you started to see digital and the role of data really start to change the landscape of the logistics space? Was there any particular point that you look back on that it really started to shift?
Look, I think as we do the analysis for customers and as that got more complicated with more and more channels coming into play. So we used to just have the traditional channels in play. And if you take retail as a classic example, it was mainly bricks and mortar. You look at how that particular sector along with consumer has evolved, and you've now got marketplaces, you've got loyalty clubs, got direct to customer from the brand's own website, you've got distributors, and then you've still got the traditional channels as well. And suddenly you've got a much more complicated landscape emerging. You've got challenges on your inventory and where you're positioning your inventory. And then you've suddenly got a change in customer dynamic that says, I want my product fast and I want it when I want it. And yeah. Suddenly you've got then challenges with where you position your inventory, what's your Pareto on that inventory analysis, and therefore can we work with our customers to understand that landscape that they're working in. And I think a lot of it is staying close to your customers and understanding their challenges to almost turn them into our challenges. Because as a tier one logistics provider, we're looking to take on more than just a simple challenge. We're looking to solve problems for our customers. And yeah. And some of that analysis, which goes along with that whole digital landscape, is our key challenge as an organization. How do we turn data analytics into a service for our customers?
Yeah. So what have you done sort of in a physical sense to invest in digital? What would be some of the things that I'd see now that I wouldn't have seen 5 years ago from a digital and data analytics perspective?
Yeah, so we have data analysts within our business. We have a department now, which is called exactly that, data analytics. Mm. The regions have invested that. Some countries have also invested in that. When customers have come to us with challenges, we've almost have done some bespoke investment in account teams and making sure they're fully supported. We actually run inventory. We run inventory in our warehouses as a matter of our standard product offering on a warehouse management system. What we've also started offering is some procurement activities as well, and then also some call-off activities, meaning that a blanket purchase order may be still driven by the customer, but we'll decide when to call that product off so that we maximize service to their customer, but at the same time, minimize inventory that's held, and then help that helps their working capital as an organization. Some of those sort of analysis that we do and how we work alongside the customer can be actually quite intricate at times. Yeah. And traditionally, that would have all been done by the brand holder's organization. Whereas some brands are now being proactive and saying, can someone help us do this with some analysis?
And your region, I guess, one of the challenges you've got in the job that you're doing is that different countries digitally are moving at different paces, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the region that I'm in today, I'm from Japan down to New Zealand and across to India. So 15 markets in that region, 10 languages and many different ways of working. So standardization, we like to think that we're standardized, but then there's often local nuances with the way things happen in that market. And the way that our customers are acting in that market as well. So yeah, there's lots of differences there, which we're trying to overcome.
Yeah. And one of my guests last week, actually on Digital Careers, we were talking about the online grocery space and the rise in sales through online. I mean, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, it was circa 8 to 10%. And we're seeing that, certainly in the UK where I am, rise in some categories to 17-18%. But in places like China and Korea, South Korea, for example, where there's a very high penetration of mobile phones and mobile phone app usage, it's, I think it was already at 20% about 3 or 4 years ago. So Asia seems to be leading the charge in terms of online and e-commerce. So do you see that?
Yeah, we do. I mean, certainly those two markets you mentioned, China and Korea, are well documented as being the leaders probably in e-com take up. The density of some of the cities in APAC as well is such that it does suit itself to that as well. And the congestion on the roads, people are quite happy to make that someone else's problem rather than their problem in getting their groceries to their door. So we do see that. I think equally, and I'm sure we'll come onto it with COVID, that's accelerated other sectors as well, not just online grocery, but other markets as well, going online very quickly during 2020.
Well, I think a lot of people listening to this show are interested to know about COVID because we're all stuck in this to some degree. And what I'm, I guess, interested to understand is what impact has COVID had on your business in 2020, first of all? What's been the impact overall?
The DPDHL impact overall as a group, and the biggest impact is that air freight, the capacity of the market has shrunk because the passenger aircraft are not flying. And therefore, there has been a distressed market out there with less belly space to take the freight of our customers. And therefore, there has been a market situation which has been very difficult to overcome from that perspective. From supply chain's perspective, so from our divisions, it's been very different by region, by country, and by sector. The two hardest sectors are probably automotive, from the reason that they just haven't been able to, certainly in the early part of the year, the spare parts needed for their manufacturing process weren't available. And obviously challenges with how many of those came from China. Therefore, a lot of their supply chains were disrupted, which led to them being disrupted and many times sort of halted production, which had an impact on us. Then we had other sectors like luxury retail, where shopping malls were closed down in many geographies because they weren't deemed an essential service. And therefore, our luxury brands as customers obviously took the hit in sales going down. But then also that pushes the stock back up the supply chain and probably lent to more storage in warehouses because the orders were already committed to from their suppliers. So we did see a bottleneck there. At the same time as that, we're going through this from a continuity perspective, making sure we're having to protect our people. So we've got people in warehouses. We split them pretty much straight away into Team A and Team B to try and protect our customers' capacity through the warehouse. Because if there was an infection, we didn't really want the warehouse to be shut down. We could switch into the other team, quarantine the team where there's a potential infection, and still protect some of our capacity through the warehouse. So we switched that into that regionally and then almost globally very quickly. But it then meant, obviously, that we had to work with our customers on forecasting, on what we could do, what the new capacity was. And then those sectors which were affected positively would have been the consumer sector, which you saw toilet rolls is the common example. But equally, the big customers in those consumer areas were very, very strong volumes in cleaning equipment, in that whole isolation market around exercise or food. There was a rush on supermarkets pretty much globally as soon as that lockdown happened. And then also we've got our largest sector in APAC is actually tech, where all the big tech companies, suddenly the home office exploded and effectively the market in desks, chairs, PCs, PC stands, speakers, VPNs, additional screens, that all obviously was very strong demand from our large customers. Yeah. So therefore that then had a knock on about how do we get those to people's homes? And managing that home delivery process as well, both with ourselves, but also our partners that we'd work with on the final mile. You can imagine a lot of customers in distress and equally a lot of updates going out from our team on where we were market by market, and then equally where we are day to day with that local liaison with customers in country, and then a regional liaison from myself and my team to work with customers regionally to give a view on how we're doing across the region of APAC.
Now, a lot of the senior execs I've been speaking to over the last 3 to 6 months, one of the things that's been a theme, I suppose, is how much digital change has happened within such a short period of time, you know, and digital change that would otherwise have taken potentially years to actually happen, but it's actually been compressed into the space of a few months. What have you seen as a result of some of those COVID-related challenges? What have you seen in the way of internal developments from a digital and analytics perspective at DHL?
From an internal perspective, our reporting has definitely got slicker. You know, Power BI is now standard pretty much across our business, whereas it wasn't previously. The whole reporting of, you know, where your customer is, where their inventory is, where their order status is instantly is a requirement. I think equally where they are across multiple markets. So we did set up for regional customers a Power BI, which then gave them the status of each of their countries that we do business with them in, so we could feed that into their regional offices. So I think internal reporting certainly has helped a lot. And even with our basics, such as site reports around people in work, infection-free, sites open or closed. I mean, we had a global network of sites, which was obviously headquartered in Germany, but effectively daily reporting around all the COVID measures, which as a business is you have to do across 500,000 people globally. So yeah, that was a pretty big data exercise in itself.
Yeah. Clearly COVID's had a massive impact on virtually every industry, of course. But let's move on to the future and what you're going to see in the future in a post-COVID world or a living with COVID world, however we want to frame this. Yeah. But if you start to think about some of the innovation within the logistics sector and some of the technological developments and digital evolution, if you like, what are we going to see if we scroll forward 1 to 2 years that's different to what's happening now within the logistics space?
Look, I think the take-up of home delivery, I think, has increased. So it's not just grocery. I mean, people are now much more comfortable to get things delivered to their homes. And I think there's probably a grey market out there, which is certainly more comfortable because they had to. Therefore, I think retailers will react to that. We've seen the brands that we're working with, if they weren't omni-channel, they're certainly moving that way. Their strategy before may have been to go with just, say, one marketplace. I think they're now going with multiple. So they're trying to do as many channels as possible, because in the early days, a few of those marketplaces actually stopped some of their more general merchandise from being distributed, and they actually focused on PPE and focused on other products. We had a large toy manufacturer that actually was cut off from a few markets, and we helped them go omni-channel direct from the warehouse to those markets that weren't previously set up. So a lot of that is our systems, which is, you know, warehouse management system interfacing to their ERPs and then enabling transactions with multiple channels and multiple customers to make sure that their brand is available to this new market, because the less channels you go with, potentially you might get cut off from some of those. At the same time, we had some hubs where cross-border movement was difficult, and we had some hubs that weren't able to supply out to other countries where they were previously. So you could argue that it will reposition inventory to be more localized going forward, to making sure you can get to your customer easily. Some of those trends were already developing pre-COVID. Clearly, customer is king, and the whole three-hour delivery around some of the B2C markets in big cities has meant that inventory needs to be available closer to the city than previously. So some of those trends are already emerging, but I think we'll see, if you look 5 years further on, I think we'll see more instances of inventory in more places across domestic markets.
Yeah, I mean, that whole immediacy of home delivery was something that I was listening to on another podcast recently, and it was talking about China and how one retail tech play within the grocery space is trying to talk about 1 hour delivery times, which is it's amazing, because in the UK, as you would know as well from the reports that you'll have read, that, you know, during COVID it was hard to get a delivery slot at all, let alone try and get stuff in an hour or two. And obviously Amazon's made big headway in some markets with Prime and next day delivery. But I guess that's putting a massive amount of pressure on your whole supply chain, isn't it?
Yes, in short, absolutely. And you've got this instance of how do you make that final mile as efficient as possible? So you could say that this 2020 has actually tested that for some of those people, because previously maybe they weren't at capacity and there was never a problem getting a slot. Now all their slots are full. So you'll actually maybe see just how they expand that. Is it a case of just putting on more trucks, but then you need your warehouse capacity to back that up as well, to be able to handle that capacity throughput of the warehouse, because you're essentially taking that off your stores. So there's going to be a rebalancing act. I think, you know, equally, the whole thing around office space is going to be interesting as well, because the one thing that's helped that for delivery companies during COVID is that everyone is in to receive the delivery because they're at home working from home. If you go back to an office environment where they're not, then you'll come back to the previous challenges of futile deliveries and people not being at home. There are, you know, different aspects for different markets depending on where that place of work is going forward.
Yeah. We'll move on to the careers section of this conversation in just a sec, but what expectations are now being placed on you and your team from the point of view of understanding data better? Because I guess this is an expectation that we've all got, right? We're across a variety of functions within organizations. There was another guest I was chatting to talking about how to make data something that's, you know, becomes part of your culture almost. But what are you seeing happen at DHL on that front?
We've always had a solution design culture in the business whereby alongside the commercial teams, there's designers and solution builders, because they're very used to taking data. It's often in the form of an RFQ, or if it's a current customer, it's a current data set from that operation, and they're turning that into solutions. We're working a lot in the last 3 to 5 years on how we automate and how we look at ways of being more efficient for customers, and that solution design team does that for us. I think we've had to ensure that they as a team also embrace the ways of handling even more data, because again, as you increase the channels and you increase the numbers of customers, you're increasing the data size that you're dealing with as an organization. You know, in the past where it was, you know, Excel spreadsheets and macros, it's now, are they Python experts, or what software are they using to make sure that they can manipulate that data to get the right solution? We've had to adapt on the go. We've had to recruit from probably different places where we've recruited from before. Our customers still expect us to be able to do that analysis and help them ongoing.
Yeah, and then I guess the experience they want from a customer solutions point of view is as frictionless as possible. I suppose it's a bit like, in a sense, you know, the way people use mobile apps, they want as fewer touch points as possible, and they want it to be seamless, right?
We would certainly see that one of our attributes as a service provider is that we can do many things. So if there's one extra service that we can help you with, Mr. Customer. But equally, let's talk about it, because often one of the challenges to doing this work is actually getting a good data set. Both from customers' ERP, and then equally making sure we can do that from our systems as well. Because often with the data analytics, the more interesting results you're getting is where you're merging maybe three or four data sets to get one image of predictive analytics going forward, for example.
Last question about your business before we move on to the careers bit. What about disruptive influences in the future? So if you're sitting there in an XCOM meeting and talking about 3 to 5 years and the possible disruption from technology of the logistics sector, what are the types of things that threaten the industry? This isn't necessarily a specifically DHL question, but the wider industry.
The notion of the fact that we consume products, and we consume them in our homes generally, so therefore you've got to get the product to the home, and it's a physical delivery. Now, clearly with bricks and mortar, you go to a shopping center yourself and you actually bring it home yourself. The same with a supermarket when you go there. You can now see that's being flipped around a little bit, where you're saying someone's going to bring that to you. But there is a capacity. There's a capacity thing to that as well. So where people live is very interesting. Is it a residential home where your drop density is going to be less? Is it a block of apartments where your drop density is higher, but equally it can be difficult to get that large physical amount of product to all of those floors using, you know, a smaller vehicle, for example. The challenges are there. I think what we're having to be is agile. So however the customer wants it over time, then the brand that we're working for is going to want to give that to the customer as a choice. And we as a service provider then have to work with our customers to make sure we give them that choice as efficiently as possible. But there will be different price points to that service. So it is complex, but I think we as a business need to adapt to that, and also then offer things like you can change the destination in transit. So you may have selected to have it at the office. You've now changed your mind because your plans have changed. You'd like it to be delivered to home. So we can do a change in transit to some of those home deliveries, which, again, takes a bit of agility from our side to be able to do that. So that's one trend which is very real, where that's a real challenge from the market back to us as to how tech can help us do that.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the careers stuff, because a question I've asked quite a few guests over the last few weeks is, if you're shooting for the C-suite, you've had a successful career, you've advanced up the ranks to a very senior level at DHL. If you're talking to a senior manager, director level type person who's shooting for that C-suite, when you look back on your career, what are the things you'd be advising them around where they should focus their time, their tensions? What's going to set them up well for that opportunity in the future, do you think? What served you well, Steve?
Listening to your customers and actually adapting to what your customer needs. So you can imagine with us as a service provider, we have our customer, but then we also have our customer's customer, who is the end consumer of the product. And I think always putting yourself in your customer's shoes has been an interesting thought process to make sure that you're relevant as a service provider and as an individual sort of creating that value. So I guess, you know, pushing the boundaries, testing the parameters, making sure you're relevant to the conversation, and also trying to listen to what they want. Because often we get very stuck sometimes on just pushing our capability and our size. And what we've got to do is actually listen to what the needs are, because the business fit for that is important. So making sure there's a business fit between what the customer is asking for and we're then proposing for them. And sometimes we can get stuck in our own publicity of what we're doing without maybe missing the mark of what the customer is asking for. So that's certainly some advice to some out there. I mean, I think trying to be flexible as well, you know, in terms of going the extra mile and making sure that your customer understands that you're going the extra mile, so that to build that relationship. So making sure they trust you as an organization and trust you as an individual, because as a service provider, actually, we're not manufacturing anything. We don't manufacture a chocolate bar or make a desk or a PC. We're actually producing services, and therefore it is a lot of human interactions and a network of human effort that does a service over a country or over a region. In fact, globally, you know, we've got maybe 50, 60 sites for some of our big customers. We would run 50 or 60 sites globally for them, and they want that to be consistent, to meet their KPIs and meet our contractual requirements that were given by them.
So what I'm hearing there is it's a solution sort of based selling approach where you're solving problems. So I completely get that, and don't rely just on the fact that it's one of the biggest brands out there. That's not going to be the only reason you're going to get the you're going to win the tender, for example. But what about people that you've hired, especially with a sort of, you know, thinking with this digital theme? Has the type of people you look for in the BD function changed because of the influence of digital, for example, over the last few years?
I mean, I certainly think we're looking for people who understand what it takes to drive that analysis. We're looking for people who get how complicated it can be and how you need to interrogate that data to find the answers. Often we're offering visibility tools where we're encouraging our customers to go out and have a look where their product is, because our tools give that to our customers. And therefore, everyone in our business needs to be aware of those tools, how they work, and how we can demonstrate those to our customers, so that, you know, they can almost self-help to see where their product is at any one point in time. We encourage, obviously, understanding of Paretos, of inventory. What are the dynamics and velocity of our customers' business going through our supply chain, which has an impact then on the efficiencies of our customer? So,
And particularly successful people that you've hired in the past. Again, this is not a digitally specific question, but what are some of the qualities you look for when you meet people? So again, if people are looking to really stand out in an interview setting, and who knows whether, you know, interviews are still going to be as widely used in the future as, say, data analytics tools to assess people. But what are some of the things that really stood out for you in a behavioral and interpersonal sense that have set them up well for a senior role?
I'm not sure that's changed over the years, Guy. I mean, I think you're still looking to build up that trust. And I think, interestingly, even on your videos, you still get a good sense of trust on video. So we're certainly using that medium a lot in terms of interviews now, and especially this year, particularly. Building up that trust is important. I then also think that you've got to look for people who are self-aware as well. So they know, they can read the room, they're self-aware of what they're saying at a point in time. Now, you can train someone to go through your products. You can train someone to chair a meeting correctly and go through the analysis and go through the value proposition to a customer. But they may have misread the room, or they may have misread the intent of the meeting, and therefore can they shift a meeting quickly to adapt to the customer's need in that meeting? And some people are not able to do that. Some people aren't able to do that in an interview. And therefore, if they can't do that in an interview, could they do it in a live situation with a customer? So you are looking for those people who are flexible, who can read different factors that are going on in the room, and you get that with an interview. So I still think interviews are very effective. You're right, you will go through other assessment factors as well during a comprehensive interview process. But that's still human-to-human interaction, I still think, is important.
Yeah. And I suppose actually on the subject of the human-to-human thing, the last 6 months has probably been a major challenge for you from a management point of view as well, because you've had a very dispersed group of individuals that you're responsible for, that you work with. How has that put pressure on you as a senior manager? What have you felt versus the pre-COVID world, I suppose?
Because everyone's in it all together, there's been a solidarity between the team. I think we've done lots of calls. I think now the research is coming out that, you know, if that's a video call, you're 20% more engaged in a video call than you are in just a voice call. Having said that, you've got to do a combination, because if you do all video calls, everyone's worn out by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So you're appreciating that everyone's got probably 10, 12 calls a day with different parts of the business. And therefore, you've got to have a mix of that medium to sustain people's energy across the day. You know, we've had Zoom morning tea and cakes, quizzes, and then we've had, you know, the straightforward update call. So we have a whole variety of what that is. And I think now that in Singapore particularly, we're now planning a return to the office, but that won't be full-time straight away. It still will be in this A and B and a partial return. And I think people will appreciate that, although there's probably a large percentage of people who are quite happy in the home office. There's equally a large percentage of people who want to get back to the office to have that social dynamic that they've missed. So
yeah, Yeah.
I think it's going to be interesting times. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And on the subject of wearing out from Zoom calls, I'm very conscious of having taken a lot of your time already. So I think that's a really good place to wrap up. And your point about the future in working practices, I think most of the clients and senior execs that I'm talking to, the expectation is that there's going to be a blended approach moving forwards. And a bit like each of your logistics markets having slightly different characteristics in a digital evolution sense, I think each market around the world and how they're dealing with COVID is going to be slightly different. So some countries obviously have fared better than others without naming names, of course. But Steve, I just wanted to say a massive thanks for today. Really interesting stuff. Sounds like a very exciting future, and the very best of luck for the rest of this year and beyond.
Great. Thanks, Guy. All the best.
I hope you enjoyed listening to my discussion with Steve around the changes taking place within the logistics world in response to the rise of digital. I also found his thoughts around customer centricity in the context of career development and hiring very insightful. Please remember to subscribe to Digital Careers, and you can watch the full-length video of Digital Careers Meets on the Barton Rock YouTube channel or the knowledge section of bartonrock.com. And remember to tune in every Monday for Digital Careers Thoughts and every Thursday for Digital Careers Meets.